Hey everyone, Chris Lombardo here from the Really Awful Movies podcast. A reminder that our book, Death by Umbrella, The 100 Weirdest Horror Movie Weapons, is available on Amazon in soft, hard, and electronic versions. LA Weekly said this about our book. It's rich with context and analysis, gruesome, yet all in good fun, a celebration of the horror genre. It'd mean a lot to us if our listeners can pick up a copy, because we're really Patreon-averse and don't feel like charging our listeners. Ever. Death by Umbrella makes a great gift for the person that has everything, with the added benefit of being, you know, totally legal. So yeah, on with the show.
Top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
I know what you're thinking. Mine's bigger than yours, right? It's not fair. Throw it away. All right? All right!
They're coming! The rats are coming! Thousands of them!
Tell me about Disneyland.
They got tons of popcorn there.
Yeah.
And all you gotta do is go climb a tree to go eat it.
It was a night like any other night. Then something happened.
Oh, good Lord. It's unbelievable. It's horrible.
Hey, wait. There's something weird here.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
Sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, my name's Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, post-apocalyptic wasteland, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1960s to today. Check us out at reallyawfulmovies.com, part of the Crypt TV family.
I'm sure you all have questions, so let me introduce you to the head of development for Securetronics Unlimited, Dr. Stan Simon.
Thank you very much. Before I open the floor, I'd like you all to meet your brand new security team, the Protector 101 series robots. 1 week from tonight, at closing, the Protectors will begin their patrol of the mall.
Paul, they look like the Three Stooges.
Each assigned to one of the three upper shopping levels. Now, are there any questions?
Yes, Dr. Carrington.
So, what do your machines do besides kill criminals?
Well, first of all, Doctor, the Protectors do not kill. They merely detain intruders until the computer, located on the roof, can patch into the mall phone system and send an alarm to the police.
I don't know. That guy looked awfully dead to me.
Just neutralized. Protectors can achieve this function in a number of ways. At close range, sleep darts fired from here and here can knock a man out in less than 30 seconds. However, the likelihood of an intruder gaining entry is greatly minimized by the steel security doors, which are time-locked from midnight till dawn.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 194, Jim Wynorski's Chopping Mall. Not much chopping going on.
No.
There is a mall, and like many, almost like a century worth of sci-fi stories, you got technology gone awry. But really, this is a slasher movie that just happens to have killer robots, and that, by way of segue, is what the title of the movie goes by. So, Killbots.
It was originally released to theaters in 1986 under the title Killbots. This is a Roger Corman production. That's a bit more accurate because the robots, the killer robots that patrol this mall. And by the way, this movie predated RoboCop, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, really cool.
You know, in terms of having automated law enforcement, called the Killbots. But when this movie was released, it basically died a quick death in the cinema. It was 15 minutes longer than the version that you and I watched.
Rather austere, lean version, which was perfect running time.
Perfect
running time. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, so they pulled it from theaters. They changed the title from Killbots, which is more of a sci-fi title, to Chopping Mall, which is a neat little play on words of shopping mall, even though, as you pointed out quite accurately, there really is no chopping. There's a lot of electrocuting. There's a lot of,
I guess,
immolating, but not a lot of chopping.
Grasping and squeezing.
Grasping and squeezing.
Yeah, asphyxiating.
Yep. For sure. But it was a good move because upon doing so, the movie caught on and it did well. And it was a financial success for Corman, for Wynorski, what have you. This film was made for a meager $800,000.
Yeah, well, I guess that's what spurred the production, right? It was like the production company wanted some horror film set in a mall. Wynorski was tasked to do it, and to do it on the cheap. And
And Wynorski's amazing. I mean, at doing that, he's fantastic. I mean, Jim Wynorski is a filmmaker who is not a household name by any means in the mainstream, but to genre fans, we all know and love Jim Wynorski. This is a man who is nicknamed Mr. Papatopoulos. That was a also the title of a very touching documentary that came out about 2 or 3 years ago, which talked about his career. It showed the really touching relationship he had with his elderly mother, who I believe was in her 90s and unfortunately passed away about a year or two ago. And yeah, I mean, the reason why he earned that nickname Mr. Papatopoulos is because one of his hallmarks is buxom women in various states of undress doing very risque things to each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess he would even say softcore. I mean, he made movies as of late, Cheerleader Massacre.
Sorority House Massacre 2.
Sorority House Massacre 2, The Bear Wench Project, a lot of Century sequels to that. But his legitimate movie career, and I say that in quotes, includes movies such as this one, The Return of Swamp Thing. Of course, that's a sequel to the Wes Craven film that we podcasted way back when.
Yes.
A film called Hard to Die, which kind of straddled the... it was another Corn production. It kind of straddled the softcore. But it wasn't quite Bear Wench Project. He also directed another cool Roger Corn production, a remake of Not of This Earth that starred Tracy Lords. It was her first mainstream acting performance once she got out of porn. He directed Ghoulies 4. He directed a film adaptation of Vampirella that was sort of, it was sort of misguided. But the man has between 100 and 150 credits. And, I mean, so many movies. And a lot of his movies are some of my favorites. They're some really, really enjoyable movies. Now, interestingly enough, when I was watching Mr. Papatopoulos and getting to know his sweet departed mother, and she was lamenting the fact that his career has sort of, as far as she was concerned, regressed to basic softcore movies made on extremely threadbare budgets, and she was hoping that he could return to the glory days when he was making movies more like Chopping Mall, movies for, you know, Corman's various studios and offshoots and whatnot. But, you know, Jim Wynorski, I count him as one of my cinematic idols up there with, you know, your Lloyd Kaufman's and, of course, your Corman's, and, you know, these are my low-budget, in-the-trenches, independent idols. And I like Chopping Mall. I mean, it's a very threadbare plot, but it's charming. It's fun. It's got some good characters. It's got a fun cast. We have Barbara Crampton in it.
Yeah, for sure. From the H.P. Lovecraft adaptations.
Say that three times
fast. And a bunch of ties to Fast Times at Ridgemont High, which one of these days we're going to have to podcast. Unique in that it's set in a mall.
No, you mentioned what were the ties to Fast Times?
I guess one of the stars in this, as well as the actual setting, which I'm proud to say, I didn't know it was the setting for Fast Times at Ridgemont. I'm talking about this mall. Mm-hmm. Also, Commando. Incredible fight scene with Arnold.
Yes.
Beating the shit out of the security guard.
Amazingly enough, these two films were basically being filmed at the same time.
Simultaneously, yeah.
Whereas Commando, being a bigger budget production, would commandeer them all during the day. Shopping Mall would commandeer them all at night. And I don't know how much money they pay to use these malls, because the amount of damage is incredible. And
considering just how generic and interchangeable malls are, I gotta say, a tip of the hat that I was able to recognize this stupid mall. I mean, my God.
Well, it's the
malls
elevator.
Are malls.
It's the elevator.
Yeah, that's got to be
it. Yeah, I mean, between this mall and the Monroeville Mall in Pennsylvania that Romero used for Dawn of the Dead, I mean, those are two of the most, I guess, recognizable, iconic malls in horror or genre film history.
Scenes from a mall, it is not, yeah.
Yeah, again, I mean, the collateral damage to these malls, it's just crazy. And one of the conditions placed upon Wynorski was that, yeah, okay, you can film your movie at night as long as it was spick and span clean by the time the mall is ready in the morning for the mall walkers to come in and do their rounds. And there's a ton of collateral damage in this thing. I don't know how they did it so fast and so cheap, but it works. Now, Fast Times. Kelly Maroney, I believe, had a small part in Fast Times. She's the lead heroine in this movie.
Yes, yes.
She plays,
well,
she plays Allison.
The nerd love interest.
Right, and she's the final girl. Mm. I guess that's a spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Kelly Maroney is also known for another cult horror film that came out around the same time, Night of the Comet. And she was also in a movie called The Zero Boys, which I saw recently. And not so great. But I mean, Kelly Maroney is sort of like a bit of a Meyer scream queen herself. She's always been a welcome presence in movies. So we got malls. Very big in the 80s. And it's interesting because I mentioned Dawn of the Dead, and both that movie and this movie, Chopping Mall, are set in malls. But Dawn of the Dead was a movie that used its setting as a critique, a social critique
of excessive consumerism. And yeah.
Whereas this one was more, I think, a reflection of the 80s and how the mall was just the hub of any suburb. And it was a place we all went to. It was a cool place to be. What would you do when you were 13, 14? Where did you go hang out on a Saturday? Don't say the library.
Well, yeah, when I outgrew the library, of course, your friends to hunt through the now defunct, almost to a store, CD store. And just to hang, and also to hang out in the food court with your buddies.
Well, there you go.
Like a de facto center of town when the actual downtown would get hollowed out and recreated in this fake, weird micro environment of a mall. But that was suburban upbringing.
And I just smiled when I saw the food court. I saw the video arcade. Every mall had a cool video arcade.
Well, you lived beside a mall as well.
I did. Back then, yep. Of course, they all had a multiplex, so we would usually see a movie, you know, a matinee for a very cheaper than it is now.
Yeah.
This mall was interesting, the fact that they had some sort of procession of women in bikinis that were advertising something or other.
Yeah,
but
yeah, I can't remember what.
I guess another Wynorski hallmark.
Yeah.
The mall, Romero used it for social criticism.
Well, this to a certain extent as well, although you didn't need a mall, insofar as it was a satire of maybe Law and Order, cultural overreach, if you want to call it that, but you could have just as easily had these killbots defending gated community, so it didn't matter that it was a mall. It's just Law and Order run amok kind of thing.
I'm just saying that in the 80s, many, many movies were set in malls, had scenes in malls, centerpieces in malls. I believe it's been a while since I've seen Fast Times, but I'm sure. Oh, yeah, Judge Reinhold worked in a mall. He worked in the food court. So that was the thing that we did. We hung out in malls.
Yeah, Smith's Mall Rats, whatever. Like it continues to this day. I mean, it's just a cultural touchstone.
Although the mall is starting to fall in hard times, due to the advent of
online shopping.
And it's no longer the place to be for kids, at least.
At least my
limited knowledge, because I don't have kids.
Yeah.
But in the 80s, the mall was the place to be. And what we have here, it's a very simple plot. We have a mall where they're going to, I guess, maybe cut down labor costs, what have you, and they're going to automate their nightly security by employing a fleet, well, it was three, but what have you, a fleet of killbots. Automated law enforcing robots.
Oh, well done.
They were not anthropomorphic like RoboCop. They didn't look human, but they were basically like a little blender on top of a tread or something.
Kind of a Doctor Who Dalek kind of. These look like a stovetop espresso maker. I don't know, like a triangular thing on wheels. That could be constructed as cheaply as humanly possible, so to speak. Yeah,
I said anthropomorphic, but really RoboCop was a cyborg. I mean,
if you want to be
robot, but
purely technical about it. Rotor, to throw in another. I love just shouting out the movie Rotor. It's just hilarious.
Yeah. And interestingly enough, I mean, these are movies that predated RoboCop.
Yeah, and I want to also shout out the Canadian. Highly underrated tax shelter exploitation movie, The Vindicator, which is another one that was filmed at the same time. It's essentially the same plot as RoboCop, and featuring the same themes of technology sort of run amok. And the first scene sort of reminded me of that, too, when in RoboCop they're demonstrating that ridiculous, like, the future of law enforcement, and they're in the boardroom, and the thing goes haywire.
ED-209.
The ED-209. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this one, similarly, there's a group of people gathered in the mall, and the corporation, I guess, spokespeople from this firm are giving a demo, and in the audience, I already got a kick out of that.
Well, this was like, I mean, this movie earns 2 stars just for, I know you're going to bring up, this is a Corman production,
yeah.
And there were many shout-outs to Corman films and characters, and yes, this is the one, two of our favorites.
Yeah, Paul and Mary Bland, a.k.a. the stars of
Eating Raoul,
Mary Warrenoff, and Paul Bortel, yeah.
And they have a restaurant. They have a restaurant in the mall.
So I guess they finally opened their bland restaurant.
Yeah, they're serving the bland.
Yeah. Which was, a neat little nod, low-budget fare and just, like, winking. Although they probably might have beaten the joke a little bit to death.
I don't think but... When you have Paul and Mary... Bland. I was going to say Bartel.
Yeah.
To me, this is almost like a de facto sequel. I was happy to see that coded. They actually opened up their restaurant.
Yeah, hilarious.
I don't think they beat it to death at all. You also had Dick Miller, who's in pretty much every Corman movie.
Indeed.
Playing the exact same character he played in A Bucket of Blood in the 60s, but now he's a mall custodian and one of the earliest victims of one of the killbots. Mind you, he's not... The first victim, that victim, is played by Garrett Graham. Another familiar face I was happy to see. Garrett Graham from Phantom of the Paradise. And many, he's also in Terrorvision and so many other great cult movies, which I love. So, once again, this you got the cast, you got your cameos, Paul and Mary, Dick Miller, Garrett Graham, Screen Queens of Note, Kelly Maroney and Barbara Crampton. Tony O'Dell was in something or other. I'm not quite sure. Care to fill me in?
I want to say some yuppie sitcom, but I can't.
Yeah, I think so.
I can't recall the title.
Yeah, he played the nerd, Ferdy, I believe was the name.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even catch his name. Yeah.
And I mean, okay, so the plot is the plot. Lightning hits the mall.
Classic Deus Ex Machina.
You got it. The mainframe of the computer goes haywire. Yeah. These machines go haywire. All of a sudden, they're programmed to kill. They no longer recognize identification, which is supposed to like demarcate who actually belongs in the mall, i.e. your nighttime employees versus your intruders. And you have a group of kids who are in the mall after hours because they want to party. Of course, they do want to get out before the mall automatically locks down. But they're unable to, and before you know it, all hell breaks loose, and it's basically a cat and mouse movie between these killbots and our kids.
Yeah, and which is the just tonight. Structurally, it's similar to any sort of slasher, although with the added bit of wisdom on the part of a filmmaker to add the sci-fi element and the law and order element, which makes it hell of a lot more interesting than a bunch of people just bandying together to fend off some intruder. Let's say if it was a house party or something. This makes it way more. Way more compelling. So yeah, after the debriefing, you get a lot of pointed questions from, I guess, the shopkeepers in the mall about how this thing's going to identify, and then they give a demo. It's like, here I am showing my ID, so he can discriminate between the employees and the not. But it never would have occurred to me to. You worked in a mall.
I worked in a few malls actually.
Why would you party in a mall? Like, as people who are underage looking for places to party, it never occurred to me as a 16-year-old to hang out there and party.
Dude.
A park, yes.
Okay, I've worked in malls.
Especially a carpet store or furniture?
Well, that's the whole thing, yes.
Yeah.
They weren't partying. What were they doing?
Well, I guess they were shagging.
They're sex. Yeah. What do you have in malls? Beds.
Yeah,
you know?
I guess.
But the furniture stores.
Oh, my.
So they're pairing off and having sex.
I hope they discounted the merchandise after that. That's obscene. Sorry, that sprung to mind immediately, so to speak. Oh, I guess so that was their MO then. Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I mean, this is not the only movie to employ that plot device either. I believe, may be mistaken, but I'm pretty certain that Hide and Go Shriek, a slasher that I discussed on a Crap of the Week many, many moons ago, also had kids partying in the mall after hours.
Mm.
It kind of was a fantasy. I mean, when you're a kid...
A little kid, if in the candy store, maybe. You'd be locked, or the toy store.
It's like, now you can pop everything.
Yeah.
And So there you are, locked in this mall, and you have access to everything you want. And in a consumer culture, what could be better than having free reign of a mall? So,
yeah, and also, well, as they did in both the Dawn of the Dead and the Dawn of the Dead remake, I mean, it's perfect fodder to showcase human ingenuity as well, because the mall offers everything, and that everything includes a sporting goods store with all sorts of accoutrements with which you can defend yourself, from rifles to ski poles or whatever the heck you want to find in there. And so, yeah, that's perfect for that as well. So it's like a pretty terrific setting when you think about it. And so, yes, of course, the lightning strikes, these things go haywire. If I'm not mistaken, the first victim is one of the technicians, some rent-a-cop sitting there, and he's like, he's oblivious, and the bot comes up behind him, boom. I think it extends extend a limb through the neck,
Graham,
which is pretty.
Gary Graham is the second victim. And then Dick Miller's the third, and then the kids start getting knocked off. And I gotta say it once again, for a threadbare production, $800,000, even in 1980s money, I mean, this movie did not look like a movie shot for under $1 million. There is some incredible set pieces. The destruction of the furniture store when the robots are zip-zapping, you know, the lasers, and everything's getting blown, and the feathers are flying, and the glass is breaking, and, oh, just incredible. And there's not a super high body count, but there's a couple really cool kills.
Yeah, and especially when they figure out, I mean, much like the RoboCop films, or where you find out that their hull is impervious to breaching by bullets, so even if you're armed, you can shoot at it and nothing happens, and then that sort of adds a little element of fun too, because you realize that escape is impossible. Garrett Graham meets with his demise. It's so sad too. He's a caretaker. He's on the up and up. Like, he's working hard, and then two of his colleagues are already on their break, and they're drinking beer in the mall, and they're leaving this poor bastard to mop the
Dick
floor.
Dick Miller, actually.
Dick Miller, yeah, to mop up the floor. And he's basically, they go out and to continue their, you know, scofflaw ways, just partying it up on the mall premises. They walk away and leave him to encounter this kill bot, which asks for his ID, and they have this fantastic encounter. The bot dispatches with Miller, and it's just, just great fun. Yeah, great kills.
Mm-hmm. But ultimately, the mall employees are dispatched pretty quickly, and then it's just a game of survival between the kids and the killbots. There's two deaths in particular that are phenomenal. Mm-hmm. I don't want to spoil both, but I will say that one of them involves immolation.
of a certain someone.
Yes. just absolutely, just great. Just great. I just found it to be just fun, just a hoot. Yeah.
And also just to try and thwart these pre-programmed killer cyborgs, they figure out that they're not, I guess, the most finely tuned assassins, you know, created by this company, and that they could probably be foiled by something that looks like a human but isn't. So a couple of the survivors figure out that mannequins can be used as decoys, which I thought was just fantastic. So they start to, again, they're hunkering down in some sort of Marshalls type women's department store, and they're just, you know, hiding behind the mannequins and using them to their utmost advantage. And again, human ingenuity comes into play to try and survive. Mm-hmm. Hilarious, fun, just fun stuff, and crackerjack plotting too. Like, no padding at all. It just flew by in no time, just with nary a pause.
Yeah, I mean, there's something to be said about movies that don't overstay their welcome. Some might say this movie is short. I mean, it ran for about an hour and 17 minutes. But you know what? That's fine. I'm getting a little sick and tired of these movies that run on for, you know, 2.5 hours that really can be whittled down to a compact, you know, hour and a half, hour and 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Not overstay its welcome.
Looking at you, 40-year-old virgin. Yeah. Many movies like that.
The Wedding Crashers was...
Oh, yeah. Comedies are rife with this. Yeah, for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
As we both pause to take sips from our goblets here.
Yes, indeed. So, I mean, there's really not much to delve into when it comes to this movie, because it's a simple plot. It's pretty much a group of 40 teens trying to party in a mall, find out that they're up against this homicidal group of robots and have to survive the night. But, I mean, like I said before, it's just something so charming, so fun, and just so kind of, I don't know, like, there's just a certain innocence, a joie de vivre, even though there are, you know, your requisite bare breasts and whatnot, but it's, I don't know, it's just, there's something, it's just, I really like this movie. I'm gonna give you my star rating before we talk about what did you learn. I'm gonna give it 3.5 stars, for what it is.
Yeah, I'm gonna do the same because it feels like a favorite, like a warm sweater. Is this? It just the logo just filled me with so much joy. It was just casting my mind back to the video store years when you were like 11, 12, and it was that. Mm. And the title is just perfect because it's that ridiculous pun, even if it's. Erroneous, you know, and misplaced, it's still like, oh, that's cool, man, chopping mall. And again, Killbots would have been too futuristic sci-fi, so this quite a stroke of genius to tap into the slasher boom at the time to say chopping mall, because I'm sure that's where they got their audience from, because you would not expect to have killer robots in a movie like this necessarily, but chopping mall, it's like, oh, who's getting chopped? What's happening? And you know sort of what to expect, sort of, when you go in, but then you're thrown a loop. And if you want to segue into what we've learned...
Well, before I do that, I just want to say, I don't know if I really consider this to be a slasher movie. I mean, it really
is. Structure.
It's a sci-fi horror hybrid. Light on the gore, although there is one or two scenes that are fun, you know, somewhat cool. I don't want to spoil them. But, you have a lot of the hallmarks of the genre. For example, you have one boyfriend saying, you know, the girl says, oh, don't leave because, but if you leave, I mean, make sure you come back. And he goes, count on it, of course.
Yeah,
you know, he won't be coming back. Things like that. Yeah. I'm pretty sure there must have been some sort of animal scare at one point in this movie. Oh, another thing that really filled me up with some nostalgia. The cigarette machine.
Yeah,
love that. You know,
yeah, oh my.
Back in the day when it was easily accessible
yeah, and then it was banished to the world of dark, pool billiard hall type, you know, settings, and then excised from the world.
The cigarette machine,
yeah. And then entirely, and that was that.
And now it's behind the counter at the...
With our draconian laws in Ontario, we can't even... look at the logos of what we're purchasing because they have such strict, but that's neither here nor there. What I learned is that this was pretty sex positive in a way. Like, there was no sort of loser who was losing out on the sexual experience. There was a loser, let's say the lead nerd and his companion there, but they hit it off in a very sweet way, and I thought that was very touching. And when others were getting it on in the furniture store, they were almost like, "Yeah, you go get them." Like there was none of this prudish, like, "Oh, I can't believe they're just doing that." It was kind of supportive, and they were all there with the same understanding that there were beds, there were mattresses, and they wanted all.
Well, that's
to,
what I mean. Yeah,
it was really cool.
There was a cool chemistry between the kids. I mean, there was nobody really making fun of anybody else in a vicious manner. Nobody deriding anybody else. The, you know, I guess you would say the requisite nerd characters, that being Ferdy and Allison. Kelly Murray's character.
Yeah. They had a lot of agency. They were useful.
And they still hung with the cool kids.
Yeah,
cool
not kids. Like maybe the fat kid in Sleepaway Camp or something. Yeah, like they were cool, just as cool as the yuppies. So that was cool.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that I learned, I mean, is that I love movies that have lots and lots of references and Easter eggs. This one had tons. You know, we talked about Paul and Mary Bland. We talked about Dick Miller. There was lots of posters for other Wynorski films hung up on different walls throughout the movie. At one point, one of the characters, I don't recall the name at the moment, but he encountered one of the Killbots for the first time, and he uttered the line, Klaatu, Baratu, Niktu, which, of course, is the famous saying from The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Yes, yeah.
So, this Easter eggs galore, and in many ways, at one point, they were watching a film on TV while some of the other... couples were getting it on, and Ferdy and Allison were watching a film, and of course it was a Roger Corman movie.
Yeah, of course.
I believe it was Attack of the Crab Monsters, I could be mistaken.
Yeah.
But, this was just a celebration of all things Corman, and...
Oh, and I also liked that there was a kind of a send-up of corporate niceties, and these kind of banal, just, statements that are made where you have like where the I think one of the catchphrases of the Killbots was "Thank you, have a nice day." So after they've dispatched with a victim, and so I thought that was just fantastic. You know, among many things, little tiny gems that are throughout this movie. So yeah, 3.5 stars for me as well. And for more, check out our 4-star website, www.reallyawfulmovies.com, and new episodes of the show every Friday for your listening enjoyment. And we'll talk to you soon.
Take care.